That decision is made by the first on the scene state police trooper, or our recovery people, our supervisor that shows up, and those decisions are then communicated to dispatch, and then eventually, in that case, Lindmar was called. So we're looking at nine.
Just on that point, is it typical to consult with the driver about that, or see if he or she thinks that the vehicle is compromised, or is that something that you just exclusively decide with the trooper?
No, that's our decision. It's a decision that's made by the state police and by the tow agent.
Okay.
And the reason for that is the law that allows us to do that says that the state police and tow agent have the authority to force that a tow be made.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
So we're using a state statute to enable us to do that. By way of performance, there were 122 recovery events in 2012 with a 60 to 90 minute average clearance time for recovery. Okay. We try to shoot for 60. We're very happy if we get pretty much all the recovery lanes code blocked and everything out of the way in a 90 minute time frame.
So when you were talking about this on the tow and service side, I think what you said is from the time you hook up to the vehicle until you get it cleared, it's not from the time a towing company is dispatched.
It's the time of notification.
Oh,
from the time that we notify our recovery operator,
okay,
until the time that all lanes are clear and the obstruction is out of the way, we want that to be as close to 60 minutes as possible. The only exception to that might be if there were the need for action or reconstruction by the state police in the case of a fatal crash or something, then the time limits kind of get skewed. But that's kind of what we do. These agreements actually began in 1992. It was the success of the recovery effort that was created in 1992 that led us to do the same thing with towing in 1993. This actually shows the nine recovery areas. And Lindmar, you'll see, has a portion of the central tri-state and a portion of 88. Ernie's is up north. We've got Hillside, Redmond's, Maggio's, Lovett's, O'Hare, and then Airline and Automatics on the south tri-state.
This is part of the contracting process. When you come in and apply to be contracted with, you come in with what geographic service you're going to service?
Yeah.
Area?
I'll cover that in a little bit.
Okay, go ahead.
Towing is really like a franchise. It's a formal agreement between the agency where we approve them as having a given territory. The territories will change based on who we feel is qualified or who's interested in performing recovery and how many we select. So the areas are not static. They will actually change because we obviously want to put areas close to where companies are located in order to minimize the amount of response time. But I'll touch on that a little bit later on. Before I get too far off of this, in terms of incident management performance, and these are broad statistics.
Am I too close?
Yes.
I apologize. Well, I heard Jim, he came off very well, and I figured I'd do the same. Overall incidents, and this was a comparison of 2011 to 2012. Overall incidents, you'll see that there was a slight increase from 11 to 12. Personal injury accidents, a decrease, that's good news. Response time, 6.17 minutes to get to personal injury crashes, and that dropped to 5.54 minutes. What's really impressive is our lane closure times, 31.44 minutes and 30.33 minutes. Okay, those are impressive times by anyone's standards, not just Illinois, but across the nation. Particularly when you consider at a personal injury, you've got a fire department that's on the scene. So those are good news kind of things. Underneath, you'll see crashes with property damage only. Our response times are a little bit longer, perhaps because we're not as urgently trying to get to them because there are not reports of injuries. But the clearance times are significantly less because you don't have a fire department on the scene. So we get on the scene, oftentimes maintenance or state police with push bumpers will literally push vehicles out of the lane if there's no injuries. And so the clearance times there, 17 and 13 minutes.
are excellent. Right now, I think we're still running around 13 or 14 minutes for this year. We track this on a weekly basis so that if we see that numbers are climbing, we can immediately jump in and take a look at that. For information, we put motorists in need. It's a very broad category. 66,578 in 2011, a decline in 2012. Lane blockage of 1,800 and 1,500 respectively. In those cases, we're able to clear lanes in 11, 12 minutes. So, and that's a system-wide average. So we consider that's in an urban area where I may have a lot of resources patrolling. It's also factoring in a rural area where I don't have a lot of resources patrolling. But the combination of us and state police covering the system, plus the integrated approach that we use and some of the traffic center pictures I showed you, allows us to do what we do. So, I indicated towing and recovery are key elements of our incident management program. What's really important is we have formal agreements, okay? And in fact, our agreements have become a model that are being used by other states and other locales across the country. Those agreement benefits give us specific assigned coverage areas, and we can hold the contractor, the vendor, the co-operator responsible for that coverage area. We establish maximum response times. They need to get there in a certain period of time. Recovery firms are allowed a little bit longer to get there because there are fewer of them. The tow operators have to get there within 30 minutes, and we track those times based on our radio system, and they have our radios. We have expected operator conduct, and we track that, and we can discipline if that's inappropriate. We have required equipment.
Excuse me, how do you track that?
Feedback from customers that are serviced, patron complaints.
So you have records of how many complaints?
An email that we received from Alfaro Trucking with regard to the Linmar incident, which we immediately reacted to and conducted a post-incident debrief. So yes, all information, no matter how it comes into us, we take seriously. We investigate it completely.
Okay, thanks.
Minimum insurance requirements, huge. Okay, a lot of tows that travel the system may not have insurance. Ours are required to have a high level of insurance as protection, not only to the agency, but also to our customers who they tow. So they're all required to be insured. There's a maximum rate structure. The towing people are required to use our invoice. We're going to do the same thing with recovery under the new agreements that we'll talk about a little bit later on. But we do control and audit every one of the invoices that are issued, whether it be recovery or towing or road service.
But these audits often happen after the fact. So
in the case of recovery, they're after the fact. In the case of towing, they're also after the fact because they batch the receipts and send them in to us. Recovery, we require those receipts to come in immediately, maybe a day or two or three or four before they actually get it to us. But the towing ones, they batch them and send them in to us in bundles every I think once every 2 weeks or so like that.
And then you track to see how frequently any particular provider has had to have the invoice altered?
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
So absolutely. We have a record of all of that. When we find that there's an overcharge, okay, we first take a look and see why the overcharge occurred, if it was an honest mistake or just his records were screwed up. But we do require refunds. The refunds have to come to the tollway. Okay, in most cases, unless they pay with a credit card, then they have to do the refund directly onto the credit card. If it's after a period of time, then they're required to send us a check. And we communicate with the customer, and we send the check back to the customer.
And we case, do it so that we make sure that the customer actually gets the refund. Is that why we do it that way?
That's correct. In the case of the refund that was issued to Mr. Winkler on behalf of Alfaro from Linmar, that was done as a credit card transaction. We required that Linmar send us a copy of the credit transaction so that we had assurance that, in fact, monies had been refunded appropriately.
Well, let me, maybe you answered my question, I just didn't hear it. You said you kept track of when you had to make corrections, but then is there a process where you go back and on a regular basis you look and see which companies you discovered most frequently are overbilling or making honest mistakes in their billing before, I mean, like not at the end of the contract period, but more regularly than that?
We do that on a monthly basis. Yeah, there's a report that's not referred to on here that deals with performance. That for the towing operators, there's a regular formula. We worked out a way of evaluating them on a monthly basis, and we share that information with the company. And they, in order to be remain in good standing with us, they have to achieve 80% on that rating performance. One of the elements in that rating is the accuracy of invoices and the need for refunds due to overcharges.
And would that be the kind of thing that would be audited in an internal audit?
Yes, it would be, to make sure that that procedure is actually being. Yes, and to also evaluate the criteria that they're using to make that performance.
Yeah, that's one of the enhancements we've done to the monitoring of towing and road service program. We haven't come up with a scheme yet that allows us to quantify recovery. The difficulty with recovery is that each one is unique and different. And so we use our agreement and the rates and our physical person who's on the scene who provides a narrative of what actually was required and what got done. We use that to determine whether the invoice was appropriate or not.
And then you have similarly a system to review how regularly there have to be adjustments on your.
We review those on a regular basis as well. And if we're looking at changing recovery zones or if we're having an issue with repeat kind of conditions, it's not unusual for us to suspend somebody for a period of time. Either as a punitive measure because they did something wrong or because they simply haven't been correcting their behavior on, say, a billing issue or on a related performance issue. we require the tow and the recovery people to consider us as a priority customer. So if they've got competing needs, they have to give us first priority. That's extremely important, because we want them on our system clearing our situation before they go handle a regular contract tow that they may have already scheduled. And that is frustrating for some of them because it's disruptive to their operations, but that's something we do require. We do discipline for agreement violations, even for operator conduct. Part of the reduction in the bill with Linmar to Alfaro Trucking was as a result of his conduct on the scene. We did not think that he conducted himself in a professional manner, and so we disallowed what would normally have been a customary charge. He was not allowed to recover his costs for transport back from M2 to his facility. That was wiped off of his bill. And that's because we did not feel as though he conducted himself in a manner that reflected well on the toll. So there was also a reduction in the bill for a $1,200 charge for, I think it was $1,200 for a skid steer that was brought out that he didn't have to use. We require them to determine themselves what they have to show up with for the recovery based on all the information we give them when we call them. But if they don't use something, they can't charge for it. And he brought out a skid steer to unload the mulch, but the salt loading device on the trailer worked properly and he did not have to use that, so he was disallowed that charge. We also disallowed any charge to repair his dolly wheels because he chose to use a single axle dolly and not a double axle, and any damages on him, as Mr. Wagner pointed out. And we have detailed operating procedures. So the agreements provide, they're about 17 pages in length. I think the new ones are going to be about 22. And they provide a very detailed way that we can define what our expectations are to them, how we expect them to conduct business, what the do's and don'ts are, what they can bill and how they bill and how they perform. Quality assurance, I touched on some of this as we went through it. There's ongoing performance reviews. I mentioned we do 100% invoices on all of the towing, on current and future programs. Reimbursements are processed through us. We do 100% follow-up on all customer complaints. Visits by internal audit to verify compliance. We actually, internal audit did a detailed audit many, many years ago of the towing program, and then most recently did a spot check of the recovery firms to make sure that they had the right equipment on at their facility in accordance with the agreement. We just got the preliminary results of that. And as I
may, may I just ask again, then when I asked that you do the process evaluation, you're saying that was many, many years ago?
No. We just, they're doing it, maintenance is doing it regularly. Now we also have internal audit, which is separate from maintenance, that apparently did it several years ago. Aware of that as much as the most recent, we asked them to also do another review, and I think one of the things we would contemplate is actually putting something on the cycle audit, but in addition to maintenance, which is the managing department, right. You know, something that internal audit goes out on some regular basis to also review, in the same way that we do with every program, that's ultimately the management responsibility of the department, but, you know, internal audit is there as a safety.
The agreements do provide for us having the ability to go in and completely audit their company and
so
their compliance
with
them. I think we do that too. When internal audit is reviewing, they go out, they're also reviewing whether we're doing our job and reporting and following up properly, which is a good check and balance. Disciplinary action, I mentioned that. There's a lot of written documentation. Every recovery, there's a written synopsis of what occurred in the recovery and a review by my field staff representative who then indicates whether it was satisfactory or unsatisfactory, appropriate or not, and what the problems were. We do review those periodically. If we have repeat violations or issues of a significant nature, it's not uncommon for us to suspend a firm. I can't say that we suspend people regularly, but we do suspend them. Linmar was suspended for approximately 60 days. We have another firm that's been suspended recently. Unfortunately, it does happen, but it's a way in which we keep control. Multiple suspensions, then we take a look at terminating the agreement. So,
John, when that happens, you've already shown us the district regions.
Yes.
So how is that divided up, or what happens during that, in this particular case, 60-day period to that region that would be covered or was assigned to Linmar?
It's an excellent question. I'm glad you raised that. In some cases, we're able to pull the adjacent firm in because they're the only ones we already have under agreement. Under what I'm going to describe as a potential new program, we'll have somebody in waiting potentially that we might be able to reach to temporarily assign while someone's on suspension. But that's an issue. If we suspend somebody and we don't have anyone reasonably close to where they're located, we're almost shooting ourselves in the foot. So we have to be very careful how we do that, because again, the goal of this is to provide immediate service to customers, eliminate obstructions, and reduce secondary crashes. So we don't take suspensions lightly, we don't issue them lightly, but we always have a game plan on how we're going to cover when we do suspend. Oops. Currently, if you're interested in being either on the swing program or the recovery program, and maybe I'll just talk about recovery, you can go to the website and there's information regarding the recovery program, regarding towing, there's sample agreements, and there's a coverage map that shows you what's currently out there. What people normally do is they call us, they send us a letter, we send them an application, they fill it out, we put it on file. We'll look at it, see what they look like, so we're familiar with them a little bit. We put it on file, and then if we have a need for a tow operator or recovery firm, we would then go out and inspect and run them through the ringer and make sure that they comply with all the terms and conditions. And then we would inspect them for compliance with the agreement, and then ultimately an agreement would be drafted and sent to the executive director for signature. The agency has been under some criticism from individuals wanting to do work for us, saying that, you know, this process is not fair. Essentially, we've got some people that have been performing towing and recovery since 1958 when the tow road first came into being. What we're proposing is a new program where the length of the agreement would be finite, and we're not really sure. We're looking for direction. We're thinking 5 to 7 years. Comments the committee might offer would be helpful in that regard. And the idea is that we're not trying to punish anybody for the excellent performers, but we think it would be a good idea to go back out into the market on a regular basis and solicit interest and involvement, and then reevaluate our current firms against any new firms that may be out there and see if we get some improvement. It may also open the door for additional participation in the program.
John, you used the term finite, but so that I understand, it would be up within this time period of every 5 to 7 years and we reevaluate. There's nothing that would preclude a current contractor from reapplying.
No, we
or
would
are
hope.
You proposing that they, after that time period of 1 period, that they would be out?
No, your first comment is correct. We would certainly encourage our co-operators who are currently working for us under agreement to reapply and go through the process. But right now, they remain as an agent forever and ever unless we throw them off or unless they go out of business. And by actually creating a limit to the agreement, I think for those who may become complacent and don't actually follow all the rules, this would be a wake-up call, I think. It might make it easier for us to actually manage them by having a regular scheduled turnover with a certain finite limit. This really describes the process that we're proposing, and there really would be 3 phases where we would actually go out and advertise for opportunities. We would establish review teams internally to review them. We would grade them based on a predetermined criteria. And applicants that achieve a minimum number of points in phase one would then move on to phase two. Phase two, we would inspect their facilities. We would do background checks on the applicants and drivers, license checks, and things of that nature. And the facility equipment inspection would be completed and scored. Out of those two, if you successfully pass those two, then we would create an eligibility pool by adding the scores together and the site inspection scores. The operators would be then ranked highest to lowest based on the first two phases. And then we would begin assigning coverage areas based on the score and their geographical location. We physically go out and drive from their facility to their closest entrance to the system, and we do a Google or a MapQuest travel time. And we compare that and determining who's closest and whether they actually can get to us in a reasonable period of time. So under this new proposed 3-phase approach, we would then pull from this pool to assign people, but then we would have people in the pool for the remainder of that 5-year period, that if somebody dropped off, we could then go to the pool and bring somebody on. Yes?
When you say operators are ranked, would you use a process similar to what engineering, for example, uses, where they have a group of people who are reviewing all these proposals, some of whom are within your shop and maybe one or two outside your shop?
Yeah, the teams that I mentioned, both in phase one and phase two, would actually be cross-discipline teams. We plan on inviting internal audit and others to actually sit and do the scoring process. We've got the process set up, and we could just brief them on it. But we think it's healthy to have several different people on a team reviewing it. And frankly, it's always been our practice that when anybody goes to visit and inspect the tow operator, there's at least 2 or 3 people on a team that goes out there. There's never a one-on-one interaction. It's just a good way of conducting business with that industry. So, well, we like to keep everything above boards. Not everyone is as positive about the towing industry as they are about themselves. So, and then we would prepare agreements and sign them. Now, this process will be a bit tedious and will be time-consuming. Right now, because of some retirements I've had, we're not actually looking at embarking on this for the recovery program until spring at the earliest, and probably going to be next summer. You don't want to change these people in the middle of winter with snow and ice. But that's our plan. And then if we're successful with doing that for recovery, then we would plan on doing that for towing as well.
I have sort of a general question. Is there a reason you wouldn't have, I know when you were talking about having sort of the main person, the main company, and then people in your file if you needed them, is there a reason that you have only one per region? Can you not get people to apply to be one of two so that you always have a...
alternative?
We've used rotation before, and I'm not suggesting that we aren't going to use it. That's the one element on phase three that I didn't touch on. Down at the bottom, you say rotational coverage and considered and approved as needed. It's a double-edged sword. You want a tow operator to be responsible for a given area, and because out of that, there's a clear line of responsibility. If there's two people, even though when we do have a rotation, we have the computer and dispatch assigned who gets the next call, so there's never any favoritism. But there's always the comparison of the two. So we will use overlapping or dual coverage in some cases, where perhaps a firm is having some difficulty, we may throw someone else in there just to give them a break. But as a rule, we like to hold them accountable for a given area. And then they develop pride in handling their area and comparing how they do with the guy next to them.
I don't understand why that same competition wouldn't work in a region.
I'm not sure I understood.
Well, you say if you have, there's pride in comparison with how the person in the next reach, I don't know, district, is that what you call it, is doing. Why wouldn't that be true if you had two companies that have a contract in each district so that, and they come up on a random rotation?
You have a lot. I think ultimately down the road you might. I think initially you've got different motivations and motives on the part of the individual companies. And you've got some companies that had a lot of other standing contractual arrangements, and you have a smaller company that's trying to get going. So there's a lot of variables there. The neat thing about this program is with a pool developed at the end, if we find that one person's having difficulty handling their area because there's too many calls or there are just not enough calls for them to make it worth, we can then go to the list and see if we can maybe improve things. We recently changed boundaries on three tow operators. One was having difficulty, and we actually talked to two or three different tow operators and changed them around to where it's easier for them to get, you know, to one area or another, and it seems to have worked out better. Both their response times have improved. And we track that. Everything they do is recorded in the dispatch computer, so we know when they get on the scene, whether they're over 30 or over 45, and that's how their performance is rated. So, a couple of questions. Yes, Paul?
I have one. I don't know. I've had talks with you before, but I didn't hear you address this. Is there a financial component that we consider? Like, we wouldn't have three towers working in one district, right? Or would they even consider, you know, bidding on that? Is there enough tows within that district to support more than one?
And it really varies across the system. If you have too many tow operators in the assigned area with too few areas to cover, the number of tows may not make it financially worth their while, given the amount of insurance that they're required to carry. These people generally have to go out and acquire additional insurance in order to work for us. And if there isn't sufficient calls that occur in a given area, it may not be worth their while. So we do, and there's a huge difference between in the Chicago metropolitan area where there's a lot of traffic and obviously greater number of incidents and cases where people break down than out in the rural area.
But as a matter of practice, we can't know whether the market works because we haven't bid this. If I understand that, we've had some people who 1958, right?
In the case of recovery, since that was a brand new program, towing has been around forever. But recovery was created in 1992, and what we did there was we issued an RFP to everyone in northeastern Illinois soliciting interest in performing recovery, and we defined what we were looking for. We got several applications in, we went through an exhaustive review, and then we pre-qualified them to be eligible to bid, and then we actually let them submit proposals and tell us what rates they wanted to charge for the various pieces of equipment that we identified they had to own and have ready to go. We then got those proposals in, selected initially five firms that we felt were qualified, and then we actually set rates based on the rates that they proposed. Okay, I'm not a proponent of bidding this on a strict bid basis because ultimately the customer is going to pay, and we need a relationship with these people. So a formal selection process, I think, is good, but bidding based on low bid or something.
I think what she was saying is this concept of, instead of having just really one provider designated as the preferred provider in the territory, do you have two? Do you have three? What, you know, and either rotate through them ourselves or, you know, however they're selected. And
in the urban area where you've got a heavy demand and that can work, and we have done that in the past. So in some cases we've got two people on a rotation, or we'll have a primary and a backup. It can work.
My question would be even more general than that. Do we have any evidence that we wouldn't have competition for this? I mean, I understand it's not a low bid kind of thing, but presume that you could go through a process to figure out who's going to be competent at this. Do we know that we couldn't, that people wouldn't be interested in these contracts if they were one of two or one of three? And I think what you're saying is, we know what was true in 1997?
92, when we first did it for recovery.
Years ago, we know what was going on.
We've heard from our tow operators.
But you said before you have people who want to get into the system, right? You hear from people, you don't know if they're out.
In the urban area, there's always somebody that wants to become involved in the program. We literally have to go out into rural northern Illinois and look at the yellow pages and see what tow operator companies exist and solicit their interest.
Because of the higher cost that they have to incur with the insurance and the equipment.
And frankly, the amount of activity on the East-West Tollway between Dixon and DeKalb is much smaller than on the Tri-State.
So we don't want to encourage accidents.
Some items we're hoping, and I'm running long, but
sorry.
I'm interested in reaction to the selection process, whether you think it's a good idea, and I may not get it today, but consider, we're not going to implement this tomorrow. Other things is the term, 5, 6, 7, what does the committee think would be a good term? Right now, disciplinary action and the termination requires individual effort and judgment. There's been some suggestion that maybe we ought to define the criteria a little bit more, that if you have two overcharges, you get this. And so I'm interested in whether the committee thinks that ought to be built in. And the other question, right now we require on the case of recovery that they own their equipment, although we understand that they do occasionally lease if they've got a piece of equipment that's down for repair. But technically the agreement says own, and there's been some discussion that perhaps a long-term lease, if a company is using leasing as a financing mechanism, we would not be interested in short-term leases because we don't want a fly-by-night company, excuse the expression. We don't want a young entrepreneur coming in and developing a bunch of short-term leases, applying and having all this equipment, and then have it repossessed when the lease expires and us be held high and dry. We actually use the fact that the company could buy the equipment as a way of determining financial stability in the companies initially. But times have changed, and we're thinking that maybe a long-term lease or ownership might be more flexible for the tow operating community. And any other suggestions you might have would be input we would love to have so that we can finalize this effort over the winter in preparation for next year.
All right, I've got a few for you. I think that I'd like to see explored as we go through this process. And I like the, on slide number 12, the three-phase process that you're proposing. My thoughts, at least to this point, are really these. Number one, right, you threw out the 5 to 7 year range for evaluating and reevaluating these agreements. My personal thought, and I recognize that it's going to be staff intensive, and so that there needs to be some period for us to regroup and kind of deal with that. Personally, I think that the 5 year period seems appropriate. It seems an appropriate time frame to allow somebody to operate within the confines of an agreement, not constantly be going through paperwork. And I think that provides us as a tollway with the best opportunity to regularly evaluate and reevaluate how we're doing things, which I think has been a priority for this board. Then as you go down, I agree with the chairman. I'd like to, as we're going in.
You're the chairman.
Oh, yeah. If the chair were here, I would agree with her, I think. that we should explore this opportunity as we're going out and requesting people that want to consider being part of this process to have more than one vendor in an area. And I think this is the process where we go through to determine whether or not some of the issues that were raised really indeed surface and prove to be barriers or not. But I think as we go through this process, I want to evaluate that. I think we'd be well served to do that. One of the things that came up in this whole Linmar thing was the discussion of cash payments, whether or not that was required or not, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But I want to make sure that as we enter into these agreements, that these vendors, I recognize that these were written in 1992, the times have changed a little bit. I want to make sure that our vendors are, that our customers are able to use credit cards to be able to pay for that payment that's demanded on site. I'd like to see that in there. As we go through this process of evaluating the whole thing, I want to make sure that cost and fee structures are also part of that, bringing in these vendors. You talked about the lease versus ownership of equipment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming that there's professional organizations that have best practices that have probably identified that. But it seems to me, common sense, that you're right, best practice would dictate that if a long-term lease is an acceptable business practice, that we don't want to exclude people from utilizing what's a good business practice. And I would encourage us to update our policies and agreement on that.
So do we think, though, that we should look at, if we're thinking about five-year terms, what is the definition of a long-term lease? Right, because if there's a financial barrier to entry, so to speak, I think you want to make sure that whatever our term is, our lease expectation, isn't that they, commit to a 20-year...
Yeah, our view would be that they are already in an arrangement where they're leasing equipment and they're already in business doing something, and we don't want to exclude them because they don't technically own a truck, because their method of acquisition is a lease.
Right.
I don't think a short-term lease on equipment might be a year, two, 3 years. We're not interested in someone applying for recovery and then going out and getting a bunch of five-year leases on equipment that they don't know how to operate. And unfortunately, that can't happen. So I think when we're looking at long-term lease, we don't want to exclude a company who is already using long-term leasing, which may be 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, I think what we'll be looking at is just making sure that it makes sense given the commitment that we'd be making to that company in 5 years. But I think you're...
I think we're on the same...
I agree. I think we're on the same page.
Paula, even though you're not here, do you have anything?
I have all my questions.
Okay, great. John, thank you very much.
Thank you for your change.
So I think just to follow up and to kind of come full circle back around, Mr. Winkler, you said there were a number of things that you disagreed with or had questions about. So I'd encourage you to go up there. But I've got a couple of questions just off the top of my head. So in advance of today, I had taken a look at my notes from when you were originally at our meeting in June and then in September, the full board meeting. And there was a reference to the fact that the driver was required to pay in cash,
right,
on site. Then John referenced the fact that there was a credit card transaction.
He didn't have $8,700 on him.
What's that?
He didn't have $8,700 on him.
In cash.
So you did pay with a credit card then?
Yeah, and we had a drive. We could have ended this right over there on Hillside. An hour and 15 minutes. From the time you could.
You want to go up there just so we can get you on the thing? You can still talk. Go ahead.
From the time you put the dolly underneath the truck, it was about an hour and 15 minutes to your Hillside facility. Now, we unloaded the truck. Now, if you want to see the bills, according to the bills, he unloaded the truck. We drove the truck over there. But in this whole thing with...
Wait, you drove what truck over there?
Our truck.
Okay. And
by the time he put these dollies underneath there, he was done with his rotator. He was done with the other truck. He had this third truck on there, which he sent out for hamburgers for the guys, and brought hamburgers back to your tollway workers.
And I applaud your state troopers there. They just walked away from it.
So, okay, so that I understand, though, do you agree that the trailer on the original truck was cracked and in unable to carry?
No, it wasn't.
It was never
cracked. It was like squeezing a beer can. As a matter of fact, everybody brought up safety here. If everybody was actually that interested in safety, Bristol Towing from Northlake, which I'm sure you, sir, you've been familiar with, Wally was there with a couple of guys. So we could have had that truck out of there quicker, except the tollway employee told Bristol to get out of here. We're taking care of this.
Okay. I mean, in all due fairness, let's take
that wasn't look. Brought up with the...
No, but what was talked about was the policy, and going back to 1992, how this came about. We're talking about recovery and talking about, Bristol Trucking, maybe a wonderful company. I'm not familiar with them. I'm not familiar with this entity. However, I think you can understand the reason that we have these agreements in place, understanding that although that may be a fine company, that there's a vested interest that we have in making sure that only qualified individuals are dealing with these recovery efforts. Something you accept?
No, because...
You don't accept the fact that there's you don't accept that there's an interest from the tollway to making sure that there's qualified vendors that are out there doing these recovery efforts.
If indeed he was going to charge me the same amount of money, I agree, but I've been using this guy for almost 40 years, and I know he wouldn't have charged me $8,700. And then he would...
I'm not sure that you...
Can I speak, please?
Well, I just wish you'd answer. I've got a question, and I think we need to get to a fundamental agreement here so that we can move forward. Do you recognize the reason that these agreements exist, and why it is in the interest of the tollway and the other drivers to have these pre-qualified vendors in place?
And I agree with you.
Okay.
But he wasn't needed there.
Okay, so at least we agree with that. Okay, go ahead.
We unloaded the truck. Truck could have went back to Powers Towing, 2 miles away. Oh, no, we drove almost 20 miles back to Lincolnwood or Niles or whatever it was through traffic, of which he's charging for his rotator, his this, everything there.
And that was taken off, right?
That's correct. One of the reasons why Linmar was disallowed charging from M2 back to their yard was the issue of receiving payment and working that out with the person. So he was not... The reduction in the bill took away his deadhead charges and any transport charges back to his facility from them, too.
Okay. All right, go ahead.
But it didn't take 4 hours. We unloaded the truck. We could have taken the dolly out in Hillside. So, I mean, let's put it this way. If Linmar didn't get paid for that, my truck was tied up for 4 or 5 hours with the driver. He didn't get paid. I had to pay him. Then I had to go and pick up the truck in Niles, the trailer, which, by the way, was towed to Wisconsin without a dolly and repaired. So, you know, things are just a little... And we moved the truck without it. This is mind-boggling to me. So, I mean, how many times... And if you give me three more times Linmar can overcharge and we're going to just throw them out, I'll be happy with that.
Yeah. I think one of the things that you heard from this discussion and one of the points that I think John made as far as board feedback, and I don't know that we heard a lot of feedback on it, but I think that's maybe because there was some consensus, that one of the clarifications that we want to make for all of these companies that are part of our program is, you know, the what they can expect in terms of kind of a disciplinary process and our expectations around their performance, and that, you know, even if it's not the case, you know, if there's not something very clearly defined in that regard, there could be an expectation, there could be the sense that there's, you know, an arbitrariness to the decision making. So I think that that's definitely something that is an improvement going forward that we're going to be incorporating, just that clarity around, you know, these types of incidents are this level of suspension or up to, you know, terminating our agreement with you if there's not a performance.
Once again, Linmar back went through the back door again. He refunded me a second time on this tow with his own company check. I just understood it was supposed to come through the tollway. Are you aware of that?
Well, I think what the policy was that if you meet our billing requirements, we require that that refund go through the tollway so that we can document that accordingly. What you're talking about is apparently, because we have no information of this otherwise, is that Linmar then reached out to you to make an additional reduction, and I assume that was probably based on an attempt to try and create some type of level of customer service with you in hopes of trying to make better.
That would be
above and beyond, and that was their requirement. I believe when you were here in September, one of the things you talked about is that with your company did these things, you would never charge anybody for that. So
no.
Isn't that really a step? I think maybe that was a step that they were taking, but either way, that goes beyond our policy. So that was just an agreement that they were trying to do with you, I understand.
But I think as we're reviewing this process, and if we were put in a new process,
mm-hmm.
that's the kind of thing that we would need to know about.
Yeah.
So
I think
it would
be
the responsibility of anybody that we're under contract with to make sure that that if they have further contact with anybody with whom they've done business on behalf of the tollway, they have to notify us of that so that we know what's going on.
Having to do with the tollway incident.
But, yeah,
absolutely.
That is,
I think that's an excellent addition.
That's already in the agreement, and that hasn't been a problem.
Well, you didn't know about this check, and it's in the agreement. That is a problem.
Yeah.
No, I'm aware. Well, the information that came to us was that there was a question of legal action being filed, and then Linmar, not in the direction of the tollway, refunded the rest of the toll.
So you were aware of the refund that didn't go through us?
It was not requested by us. We only require...
But you were aware that that
happened. But we were notified, it sounds like.
Yes, we had information that came to us that that was happening.
But was it the company that told you that it was happening?
Is this consistent with what you guys...
Was it Linmar, sure, or was it...
It might have been one of the other tow companies.
Okay, all I'm saying is, as we go forward, if it is a requirement and it's not being followed, that's one thing. If it isn't a requirement, we need to put it... in the process.
I understand it. And see, the tow operators, part of the agreement is that they have to recover all of their money from the offending vehicle. Okay, and that's between them and the offending vehicle. In this particular case, we don't think that Linmar did a very good job of resolving that.
But it sounds like one thing that we need to go back and revisit, right, is where we got the information about the additional refund,
mm-hmm.
and whether it was Linmar, per our agreement, that alerted us to the fact that they had done this, and if not, something we need to look at. It sounds like okay. So I think that you're right. If it's currently in the agreement, which sounds like that's what we're saying it is, then we'll have to go back and take a look at that and see if there was something outside the norm or outside of our policy that happened there. It is at the end of the day something that they needed to alert us to. It sounds like per our policy and procedure, but it's not necessarily something that we would have stopped from happening. You know, we just intercede and tell a company that they can't refund money. I don't know that we would necessarily take that step, but we'll take a look to see if they complied with the alerting us the way they were supposed to.
And can I bring up one thing? You guys are talking about your fleet, the traffic violations. For us that have fleet, we'll go through a toll booth, and then the next one won't pick up, and then the next one picks up. It's weird, but it happens about once a month. Wouldn't it just be simpler if we could just write something? I mean, you know, because we give you a credit card. You just send us an email. You know, you went through here, didn't pick it up. We're just charging you. And then that way, everybody saved a lot of time and money.
Yeah, I think
this is
so
a customer survey.
This is an on-site customer survey. So what we'll do is take that. We are creating a specific fleet division because we do hear from fleet customers that it's sometimes more difficult to manage a large fleet with the tollway. So that's something we'll take back. That's something that we'll take back there. And I think in our new toll collection system, we'll have the ability to maybe put together trip sequences that way. Currently, we don't necessarily have have that ability, although it seems intuitive.
Well, that they send us, you're late or something, because nobody follows this stuff, and then you call them up and they say, oh yeah, here, just pay the... So then you send a statement out, and this, just take the money. It's you know, nobody's going to argue about it.
Well, you mean just subtract this from your balance?
It's more problems getting through to pay for $1.50 or $3 or whatever the toll is, and it's worth.
We'll take it under advisory. It's a good thought.
So I have one more question. I think I understood. Well, I think it's a combination. I think what the Inspector General was saying was he was monitoring whether we were following our procedures, and therefore it was not necessary to talk to Mr. Winkler as part of your investigation.
That's correct. Mr. Winkler wasn't present.
Okay.
No, we didn't call my driver, and we didn't call the owner either.
And I didn't need to, because the statements from the tollway employees covered those people.
Okay, because you were looking at the procedures, I guess the question is whether if we get a complaint from somebody about a company, do we have a process by which we go out and speak to the person who's actually made the complaint and get their side of the story?
We don't always go out. We frequently talk to those people. We spoke with Mr. Winkler on the phone. We spoke to the president of Alfaro Trucking on the phone. Okay. We got an email from Alfaro Trucking. We had several conversations back and forth prior to us doing our incident debrief, where we brought in the tow company and all the other affected parties that were on scene, and had a rather in-depth review of what did and did not happen appropriately at the scene.
I just want to make sure, because I thought what I heard from you, Mr. Winkler, is that no one has spoken to you.
Well, we spoke on the telephone, but you know, everything, you know, we didn't have a chance to refute any of this. Like I said, not once was it brought up that we had our own tow truck there first.
Well, you had talked about that.
It was never brought up with your Inspector General in his report.
Well, I think he was reviewing whether we were following our own procedures. Right. Our own procedures, that it's just not the way the system is designed to work.
I
understand it.
I would say that were the tollway people on the scene and the state police on the scene in agreement that there was a problem with the truck and it couldn't be towed?
Yes.
Okay. So
the trailer.
Right.
Okay. I just want to make sure the woman had spoken to you and you know how that happens. I guess we should review as we're creating these new procedures. If somebody feels as if they want to come in and show us pictures or talk to us or whatever they want, do we have a provision in there which permits that to happen?
File a written statement.
That is how we conduct business right now.
Okay. I think just be useful to think about that.
Well, and I say it sounds like that's provided for now. Yeah. And there's an opportunity to file a written statement.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay. A formal written statement.
Okay. And pictures or anything else that anybody wants.
Well, that would be attached, I would think, to a formal written
statement. Great. Thank you. I just didn't understand.
Good. So we will take all of this under advisement as we look to make some improvements to our process. And, you know, report back as we see the outcome of this new kind of round of, you know, updating our total agreement.
Thank you. At this point, it'll probably be after the first of the year. Once we get things pulled together, and hopefully we can send you some information. But thank you for your guidance.
Okay, after the first of the year, then we'll have you guys come back and give us an update of the committee where we are.
Yeah, I want to just add my thanks to everybody for taking this seriously, for putting the presentation together, and really Jim and John and his group for helping us understand this. I'm sorry I asked too many questions and I kept it coming to you.
We're already adjourned. I would adjourn, but we're done. So.
We'll just drift away.
Thank you,
Chair. Yeah, thank you.